Welcome back to another episode of the Authors Unite Show. Here's your host, Tyler Wagner.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Authors Unite Show. Today, I have Jessica Zimmerman with us. She is the USA Today and Wall Street Journal bestseller of Sleeping with a Stranger. So welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course, grateful to have you on. So I always like to start like from the beginning. So when you were younger, did you think that you would be writing this book, or was it a complete surprise to you?
You know, it's really interesting because when I was 3 years old, I was in a car accident and my sister died and I survived. And there was always this thought, you know, that automatically puts you in a bit of a weird position. You know, no one else grew up having the pressure of being their parents' only surviving child. No one else grew up, you know, having to correct people when someone would say, oh, you're an only child. And then you're like, well, actually I'm not, but my sister died. You know, it was always just a little different, you know, and I knew that I was different than other people because of that. But when I would come home, you know, at night or, you know, after school or whatever, while my friends had siblings to play with, I basically sat in my room and I would sit in front of a mirror and talk to myself and I would interview myself. And that was like my friend. And I just remember thinking from a very young age that I was going to do something important. And I did not know what that meant. And I did not know, I couldn't, you know, I'm not like a singer or a dancer or an actress or anything like that. But I just knew, and not that I'm not saying like that's the only thing that I, maybe at a young age, that's what I considered. Like I'm talking young, 5 or 6. I'm like, oh, that's important. They're known, they're seen. Yeah. But I didn't think I was going to do any of those things. I just knew that I would do something important. And I did not know what that was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I kind of felt similar when I was younger. I was like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like I want to do something big.
So, yeah.
So to dive deeper a little bit into that, so obviously, I mean, you were 3 years old. Like, what was that? Do you like, I mean, obviously you remember it, but I feel, at 3 years old, like you're obviously not all the way. So is it a piercing memory, or do you remember how it felt?
Yes, of course. I remember and that's a great question. And because this is another thing that's interesting is growing up, I would always have people say to me, like other adults around me who would find out that I lost my sister, they would say to me, oh, well, at least you were three, like, at least you don't have memory, or at least you were so young. Or they would say, oh, you're poor parents. But they would never say like, oh, I'm so sorry to me. It was always like, oh, give your parents a hug or something, you know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, I had a loss too, you know? So there was always kind of that frustration, but, much later in life, yes, I have a memory of the day, I have a memory of the funeral. I have a memory of a few days after the funeral, you know, and her absence. And this was my best friend. I mean, we did everything together. And what else is funny is that when I was pregnant with my daughter, Stella, the day she was born, I'm talking minutes after she was born. And this is not something that I had premeditated or planned in advance or anything, but minutes after she was born, when the nurses took her and they were, you know, measuring her and cleaning her off and all of that, I knew that I was, and I forget the exact day right now, it's actually in the book, but, it was like 3 years, 5 months and 14 days or something like that was exactly how old I was when my sister died. And so I put a reminder, like an alarm in my phone for 3 years, 5 months, 14 days, because I wanted to see my daughter at that exact age, on that exact, you know, the exact day, how old she was when, what that looked like, so that I could almost validate for myself. See, this little girl knows so much, like she is very aware. And of course she would be heartbroken if she lost one of her siblings or, you know, yeah. I just wanted to, I guess, validate myself. But I ended up going to therapy, starting therapy in 2017. and I now go every week. It's like, it's fascinating to educate yourself about yourself. But one of the first things he told me, and it was really freeing, was he said, the day your sister died, you aged emotionally a decade, which made a lot of sense to me. That was the first time in my life that something, it all kind of clicked, because I just always felt a little bit, you know, like I had to kind of, okay, this is what my friends are into, so I'll be into this. But like emotionally, I was just a little bit ahead. I mean, you know what I mean? Just thinking, like in sixth grade when people were switching boyfriends and girlfriends every, you know, 5 days, I was not into that. Like, I was like, no, I just want like a boyfriend and to keep a boyfriend and to like have a relationship. And, I just had a different mindset.
Yeah, no, I feel you. How old was your sister?
She was almost nine.
Okay, so she's 6 years. That's actually, I'm 6 years older than my little brother, so same distance. Gotcha, okay. And then, so wow, that's so, I did not know this actually, so this is like profound. So like you, so that happens, 3 years old, and then you continue school, obviously. Did you go to college?
Yes, I went to college. Okay. And I think something that's interesting about that is my mom didn't work. My dad worked, and my mom kind of put all of her energy into me, her one surviving child. And when I left to go to college, I saw how hard that was on her. Like, it was almost like a death all over again for her. And I realized right then and there that I needed to have something that was mine, and that was okay. Like, if I were to one day get married, and if one day I was blessed enough to have children and we were all to get in a car accident and something happened to all of them, that I would have something that is just mine. It was almost emotional security. And so that's when I, you know, was like, I just want to own my own business. I don't care what that business is. I would have sold knives for a living, and I almost did, but I just wanted to own my own business. And so, and then too, with college, I hated college. And there's, you know, I talk about this in the book about how I think that, you know, when we're born, society kind of gives us this script. And it's like, this is how you're supposed to behave, and this is what's expected of you. And growing up in the South, it was expected that I would graduate high school and I would go straight to college, and I would be in a sorority and I would get a degree, and then I would get some job. And that was, you know, or I would marry someone and that person would take care of me. I mean, that's just kind of what the script was. And I realized during college that I really fought with that. It took me 7 years to graduate with a communication degree because I just hated college. I never wanted to go to class. I never wanted to participate. Yeah. I mean, I really met some really wonderful people through the sorority that I was in. But I mean, there's nothing about me that is into that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like now, like anyone who would meet me today wouldn't ever believe that I was in a sorority.
And what college was it?
It was the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville.
Okay, gotcha. And what, I'm just curious, what sorority?
I was a Kappa Kappa Gamma.
Kappa, okay, because I was also in, I was a Pike. I don't know if they had a Pike there. So, but I, similar to you, I just kind of went the other direction. I went to college for 2 years, and the people aspect I loved, but the, it just like clicked like 2 years in. I was like, the end result of this is not actually somewhere I want to be. So I was like, why am I spending so much money on this?
Right.
Like, let me, so then I just dropped out. And just like you, I think it was kind of like a security measure. Like I realized at a young age that even, you know, even though you have a job, it doesn't mean it's secure. Cause like the founder of any company, like they're not sharing everything with their employees. So it's like, you could wake up one day and get fired.
Right. So, totally.
Yeah. To me, like people, the terms like 9 out of 10 businesses fail or whatever, like they make it seem like entrepreneurship is way riskier than, but I, for me, it's just honestly flipped. Like I would be waking up with anxiety if I was, if my like future was upon somebody else's control.
You know? Oh, same. Like, same. And I think too, for me, like if you, there's so much that is out of our control. And I think that, you know, and this is something I talk about in Sleeping with a Stranger, the, that lack of control. I lost my sister, that was out of control. I talk about how my husband gets really ill and how that's kind of out of my control. And so, what was interesting about, you know, college or owning your own business or entrepreneurship is that, like you said, going to work for someone else, you're not in control. Going to work for yourself, for me, I will bet on myself every day.
Yeah.
Because I am my best lottery ticket. I know that if no one else shows up and works hard, I am going to show up and I'm going to work my ass off. And so it was never, it was always kind of a no-brainer to work for myself and bet on myself.
Yeah, 100%. No, same way. So yeah, let's talk a little bit more about Sleeping with a Stranger. So like, you know, obviously we don't want to give it all away, but so what happens? Like you, your husband, he gets a certain illness. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So Sleeping with a Stranger is a very real, raw, honest, and if I do say so myself, funny memoir about how to find yourself when the compass is lost. So my husband, Brian, this was 6 weeks after I gave birth to my twin boys, 1 week after we celebrated my daughter's second birthday. Okay. So we have little bitty ones. Okay. I just want to stress again, newborn twins. Okay.
Yeah.
So, he gets this mysterious illness that no doctor can diagnose. He, was in and out of the hospital. He had taken care of me. I mean, I went from my father taking care of me to my husband, Brian, taking care of me. He was a financial advisor and I had never brought home a penny. I had a business, but it was a kind of one of those little hobby businesses, you know, where you can say that you're a business owner, but like making real money isn't really a requirement, you know? Yeah. And, that's what I had. And then all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, not only do I need to start making money, I have to now support a family of five while figuring out what's wrong with my husband, while raising these tiny children. And like I said, I bet on myself and I was able to figure that out. My business took off. And while that kind of responsibility grew, I kind of, for the first time in my life, started to really feel comfortable with who I was. And I recognized myself for the first time, and I was very different post Brian's illness than I was pre his illness. And the same thing happened with him. I mean, he became a different person, and now we are looking at each other, two completely different people than we were when we set out on this journey together. And we have to ask ourselves, you know, do we want to stay together? Do we want to love each other through this? And those vows were really tested, because let me tell you, I said for better or for worse in sickness and in health, but I never imagined at 33 years old being in the grocery store buying, there's a line in the book where I say, I'm here at my neighborhood Kroger and I look down at my shopping cart and inside there is a colossal box of newborn diapers. There is a package of potty training pull-ups for my toddler Stella. And then there is a bag of Depends diapers for men. At 33 years old, you don't think that that's going to be your life. You don't think that you're going to have your husband have basically the most unsexy illness that is possible, and how that affects you as a woman, how that affected him as a man, how that affects your relationship. But I will say, I believe that this is a rallying cry for women. I think women who are coming to terms with their own trauma, and I believe who want to write their own script and are tired of reading off the script that society hands us. But I really do think above all that Sleeping with a Stranger is a testament to the power of healing. Of healing our bodies, our spirits, our relationships, and above all ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So at this time, when your husband's very ill and you both change, And literally you both, like, you're obviously, you know, helping him out, but you guys reflect, like, you guys come across a realization of, like, do we actually love each other like this much? Is that kind of what you mean? Like, is that what happened?
Well, it's interesting because I think that people, unless you have been through being a caretaker for someone who is absolutely helpless, you just have no idea what that is like. And what happened, I mean, for me, listen, like I said, this is a very honest reflection of this journey. But for me, there were moments where I was in such fear. Like, that's another thing. So entrepreneurs like to talk a lot. I know there's a lot in the female entrepreneur world. And it's like, I make 7 figures. I can travel the world and have my kids. And you can do it too. And it's, you know, all this stuff. And for me, I'm like, okay, but what's driving that? Like, let's be really honest, because that stuff doesn't just happen. There is a drive there that we have to talk about. And for me, that drive was fear. So was I able to accomplish those things? Sure. I mean, a lot of that's smoke and mirrors. When people say 7 figures, that's 7 figures in revenue. That doesn't that doesn't mean there's 7 figures in the bank. So let's just be honest about that.
Yeah, I agree. With the e-com stuff too, people got to start being, I know people that do, they literally do 8 figures in e-com, but they're like, the percentage is like 5%.
Yeah, totally. So it's like, let's just be honest about it. And so, but for me, that drive was fear. I was so scared that I was going to lose my husband, like I'd lost my sister. And so that fear became my drive, and I became laser focused, like a dog with a bone, and I was not going to fail and I was not going to give up. And during that time also, there was back and forth moments of me going, man, look at me and look what I could do and look what I accomplished. And I mean, in like the worst circumstances. And then at the same time, I would think, ugh, I'm so mad at you for getting sick and forcing me into this role. I never asked for this. I never asked to be financially responsible for everybody. I never asked to have to work all these hours. You know what I mean? And like, he can't help it. He's sick. And he just needs a wife who's going to love and support him. And some days he got that. And some days he got, you know, a not so nice wife who was resentful of something that he couldn't control. And then I'm sure, you know, we've talked about it. There was a little bit of, you know, heartache for him. He had never, you know, he was fired from a financial advising job, and he, you know, that he had gotten his bachelor's and his master's and passed his Series 7 and all of this. And now he's been fired for something that he couldn't control. And now there's the mental illness that he has to get through after the physical. And I don't know how to deal with mental illness, certainly didn't back then. And there was almost this frustration of like, when are you just going to be okay? You know what I mean? Like, we figured out the physical stuff and now we've got the mental, and like, when are you just going to pull it together? And I mean, it was hard. It was hard. And there's a moment in the book where I talk about, you know, Googling Arkansas divorce attorneys. And, you know, there's no one who's divorced on either side of our family. And so that's a big, you know, thing. But I was to the point where I was like, I don't want to live like this. And, but also we hadn't really worked through all the trauma. And so anyway, it really is just a very honest thing. And also, like, people wonder, I know I used to wonder, well, when someone who's married has an issue like this, like, what happens to their sex life? Well, I tell you, it's not real pretty, you know, and, you know, are you able to heal that? And so it's just, and what I love so much about Sleeping with a Stranger is the people who have read it will reach out to me and say, oh my gosh, thank you, because you put words to feelings that I've had my whole life that I never knew how to articulate. And so that's, I mean, that's great.
So, just so people have some context, so where were you, like, born and raised exactly?
Conway, Arkansas.
Oh, you were, okay, Arkansas, gotcha, okay. So, and because that's why you said, so it's kind of like Southern culture, and nobody in your family had ever been divorced, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, I guess, whatever you're willing to share, because I guess we don't want to give the whole book away, but, like, you know, is your husband okay now, or like how
he is? Yes. Yes. He is okay now. It's funny. I used to do speaking engagements, and, I would share a little bit of this story. And one time I had this speaking gig and I was up there and I talked for like 45 minutes and I'd mentioned my husband's illness at the very beginning. And at the end I go, does anyone have any questions? And like the whole room put their hands up and I was like, oh wow. Never. Okay. And like, I called on one person, they go, is your husband alive? Is he okay? And I was like, oh yeah, he's good.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was like, so, but is he like all healthy, like the illness has been reversed, or is it still like lingering in a sense?
So I believe that what, you know, it's a journey of, you know, we had to go through many, many doctors, and then we, you know, I made a decision. There were a team of doctors that wanted him to have his colon removed. And I just had this gut feeling that that wasn't right. And I stood up to these doctors and I said, I need the release forms, like with all due respect. And they were like, you cannot release him. Like, he's so ill. He had lost 50 pounds. He was so underweight. And I just said, with all due respect, I don't believe what you think he has is actually correct, because every medicine you've given him has just made him worse. And I don't want you to remove his colon. I'm going to go get some other opinions. And when we started going the holistic route, he got a little better. And then it actually ended up, we went to, we had a Skype meeting with a doctor from New Zealand. And we just learned that all the medication that he was taking was basically killing him. And when we got him on supplements and got him, you know, some food allergies and stuff figured out, he got better. Now, I believe that your mind, body, and spirit are connected. So I believe if you are really stressed, you are going to get sick. So I can tell when my husband is stressed, because he will have like these flare-ups, these like stomach flare-ups. We did not remove his colon, and we never, he's good. So, I mean, the man is 95% better than he was back then. But like I said, that is his connection to his stress is with his gut.
Gotcha. Okay.
I don't know if that helps answer your question. I'm trying to answer it without giving everything away.
Yeah, no, oddly enough, I don't know. I don't think it's related. It's definitely not the same thing. I actually have a similar thing. The doctors have told me it's, what do you call that? I'm blanking on the term, but either way, when your blood test results come back, when I'm stressed, my bilirubin like shoots through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And it like causes me stomach pain. So literally, yes. Stress and stomach, I can very much relate to that.
Yes.
Although I think it's, you know, whatever your husband has, probably different. So interesting. Now, because I like to be as raw as possible, so just know I'm not trying to be inappropriate.
No.
You piqued my curiosity with the sex thing. So
yeah.
So what was that like? Like, did you ultimately like go like a couple years without sex, or like what
happened? Yeah. So, first of all, I had twins. And so after you have birth, you give birth to twins, you're like, no one touched me for a minute. I just kind of got my body back a little. You know, it's a home for me, not three people anymore. And you have like kind of 6 weeks that you don't touch each other. And then that 6 week mark is when Brian got sick. And so there was, I think it was 2 years. Like I said, it's all in the book. But a couple years where we didn't have sex at all. And then when we did again, it was, so Brian, when he was at his worst, he was in the bathroom like all hours of the day and night. And we didn't know what was wrong with him. And basically, without being like too terribly graphic, there was just like moaning and groaning, like just like we've all been there where we're in so much stomach pain that you're just like, oh, you know, like it just doesn't feel good. And so to then fast forward to him feeling some better, not 100%, but men are funny like that. They can still be kind of sick and be like, my sex is great. Where women are like, they barely have a headache and they're like, leave me alone. Yeah. But so he's the one who brought it up to me. We end up having sex that night. And the only way that I could describe it And I am in no way, listen, I have never been raped. I have never been sexually abused. I'm in no way comparing it to that. But what it felt like to me was, this is unwanted. I don't know who this person is anymore. He felt like an unknown person. He literally felt different because he was so underweight. Yeah. So that was odd for me. The moans and groans of sex reminded me of the moans and groans of him being in the bathroom. And so what's interesting about sex is it's really one of the only times that we are 100% present, that we cannot be distracted by, you know, a podcast or a television show or music or whatever. And so you're just in it. And so what's ever kind of, that's why sex is really difficult for a lot of people, because what you really need to be dealing with is going to come to the surface. Yeah. And that's what was going on. And so it just, so then you have to work out all of that. And then you have to have those uncomfortable conversations. Now, I've always been really honest with Brian. And so to me, those conversations aren't uncomfortable, but I mean, it's not fun to tell your husband, like,
yeah,
it reminded, like, I that was not fun for me, or that, you know,
yeah, no,
you're really skinny, and yeah, like, that's not fun. Yeah. And so that just took a while to, like, work through. And yeah, thankfully, I mean, I heard a quote one time that said, if you want to know what a really good marriage is like, stay in one. And there's something about that that always kind of stuck with me. Because I've had many moments where I'm like, ugh, I want out of this thing. But I do, you know, at the end of the day, I know that that is just like the frustration and the tiredness talking. Because when I really do look at that, I don't want to be with anyone else. I do want to be with him. But it took a lot of work. I'm not going to lie about that.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, because, like, I think, like, people listening right now, or into the near future, they would kind of think, like, what could possibly be funny about any of this? So, like, like, what are the funny parts? I'm curious.
I know it is. Well, listen, I had a sense of humor about it the whole time. I mean, there's moments where I think all the stuff about me being pregnant, because, I mean, we have to walk through our story, right? We have to walk through us meeting and, like, how great our relationship was for, I mean, we were married for almost a decade before we had any children. And so, which is really odd in the South. I mean, most people are like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You know, like, they like have a baby by their time they're 24. So for us, like, we had to kind of really share that. I needed people to be invested in Brian. I needed them to want to cheer for him, because he really is the best human being I know. And so I had to share that in the beginning. So there's a lot of funny stuff, of course, at the beginning, just in our relationship of us getting pregnant, gosh, of carrying twins. There's a lot of humor there. But even with his illness, there is humor in just that. I think anyone who's exhausted can relate to, you know what I mean? It's just like, I'm just mashing this avocado, like, for my son to eat. And all I want to do is, like, stab myself with this fork. You know what I mean? Like, there's just moments of just, like, humor.
Aren't those thoughts wild? They're, like, yeah, so normal, but, like, it sounds crazy, but it's like, I've definitely had, like, a weird thought like that. I'm like, I don't even know where that came from, but, like, I literally just thought about, like, stabbing myself in the leg.
Right, right. And it's, you know, listen, this story, I have to tell this story how my personality is. That's how my personality is. Like, I'm kind of dark humor anyway. And so, and no one's going to want to read this story if it's just so serious all the time. It's about a very serious and unsexy topic, but it is filled with humor. And I think people who read it are always, they're delighted in that, because it's such a real conversation. And it's not just about his illness. It really is about my journey of my life so far, and about how I got these feelings, and why was I so determined to make it work, and the drive behind my business and like all of this stuff, you know? And I think that there's a strength inside of each of us that we just don't know until we're faced with it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I really do think it's a triumphant book at the end of the day for women and for men. The men who have read it have really, that it's interesting because they'll come up to me and say, gosh, this made me really understand my wife better. And this made me appreciate them better. And this also made me take a real look at my life. And I don't want to be so stressed with work and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just been really fascinating to hear kind of all sides of the coin.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like, I think, you know, people, obviously you couldn't avoid this. This was like an actual like illness, but people tend to try to avoid difficult problems. But I feel like the difficult times, that's what really makes you. So like, for example, like you've already, if I had to guess, like anything in the future that comes your way, it's just like, it's just not even close to what you've already been through. So it's kind of like, not that, you know, you would wish this on it, but it's like, it's like a reflection is what I'm trying to say, I guess, is it's like, you've already been in the depths of like some serious shit.
Yeah, literally.
You know, you wake up with a headache. It's like, dude, okay, it's been worse.
Listen, I have so much gratitude for that experience. Yeah. It really is an honor to walk beside someone. Even though it's hard, even though it's really hard, it is an honor to walk beside someone through a health crisis, because you are so needed, you are so relied on, and you have a real opportunity to stand up and to lead and to help someone. And I'm so grateful that we went through that at such a young age. At first I was, of course, when you're in it, you're upset. But now I'm like, you know, in my 30s, I've learned that, and there's a part of me that's always known this because of the way I was raised, because my sister died at such a young age, but there's even more so just this fact of like, I don't want anyone around me who isn't positive, who isn't for me, who isn't like, I give zero qualms about anyone liking me or, you know, trying to impress anybody or what anyone thinks about me. I really don't care. You know what I mean? And I don't say that from this like flippant place. It's just a fact. Like, I just want people around me who are going to be supportive, and that just makes life so much better. Yeah. I'm very happy to say no to things that I don't want to do, you know. That's not a problem for me. And I think when you've really lived through some things, you are able to do that. And that's why they say like women finally in their 50s, like their 50s are like the best years, because they've finally gotten to that place where they can say no, and they can just say goodbye to relationships that no longer serve them. And I, you know, learned that in my 30s. And I remember my mom and dad being like, what a gift that is for you, you know, to have learned that at such a young age. I think Brian and I both have. And we just, I don't know. I just am, you've got to walk through pain to experience pure joy. And just to give you a really quick example, we just lost our dog of 15 years last week. And I mean, this dog, I mean, I know it's just a dog, but this dog laid with me in bed rest. That dog was there for me every day when Brian was sick. I mean, and so to go from after she died, I remember just, I was like, ugh, I just want to drink, or I want something, or I want to watch a show. I just want to like numb this pain. Yeah. But then I just said, no, you've got to just sit with this. And you need to cry, and you need to experience the pain, and you need to feel the pain. And because it never goes away until you look it in the face and you face it. And so I just sat there, and for, you know, a few days, I just, every time I had that pain, I allowed myself to feel it. I allowed myself to be sad. I did not drink. I did not try to like escape with some kind of distraction. I just was present in it. And I think that that's how we heal, and that's how we're able to experience joy.
Yeah. No, it may be literally one of the best lessons to ever discover, because it's kind of like a paradox. It's like the more you are set on trying to avoid something, the more it actually builds up within you. And that's when, like, you know, you keep avoiding this pain, and then, like, you know, 20 years go by, and that last, you know, there's the knife is dirty, and then yeah, it just explodes.
Yeah.
It's exactly how you did it is how I would imagine, I would imagine, like, a psychologist or therapist would tell you, like, no, you need to actually, like, digest the pain. Like, mm-hmm. because if not, it'll come out in other ways later on.
Right.
And I also just, you know, I don't think I've had multiple dogs growing up. Like, I think it's real. It's, I mean, you know, it's not equatable to like a sister, but it's close, honestly. Like, a dog becomes like your companion. Like, it's your like best friend. So yeah. I don't know. I cry every time. One
totally.
So I think it's very serious.
Totally.
So I want to ask this just because it was brought up a couple times. So your business, what actually, like, what is your business?
So I, in 2011, I purchased a wedding rental business, and I, you know, did everything that I thought was right, which was probably wrong. And so I was working like 16 hours a day, making no money. And then after I had my daughter Stella, I was like, okay, you've got to figure this out and get it together. And I started, learning everything that I could about business. And then of course, Brian's illness kind of, you know, just even amplified that, but I was just reading everything I could about business. I was meeting with consultants and financial advisors and business advisors, and I was going to workshops and conferences, and I was researching the habits of successful people, and I really learned the foundation of business, which I think that's where most entrepreneurs struggle, is they go straight to their product or their service, and they don't take the time to build the foundation. And once I built the foundation, my business took off very quickly. And then I utilized a low season by writing about it. Now, at the time, I didn't even know about online courses. I just wrote what I had done to make my wedding business successful, because I was doing floral design and wedding planning and all of that. And I wrote it, and I put it in a locked PDF. It was called The Business Behind the Blooms. And I had zero people on a newsletter list. I had 300 followers on Instagram, and I sold 44 copies. And about 6 months later, and I just thought I'd sell that one time. But about 6 months later, I started getting all of these testimonies from people, and I did not ask for them. They just were emailing me saying, oh my goodness, a month after I took your program, I booked my first $20,000 floral order. Oh my goodness, in 6 months, I've made six figures because of what you taught me in The Business Behind the Blooms. And so I thought, oh, okay. And then I had people start to reach out going, can I get a copy? Can I buy one? So we launched it again, and we sold 250. And that always felt so much more comfortable to me, or much more like myself, than the actual wedding business ever did. People who are in the wedding business, man, they eat, breathe, and sleep it. Like, they love it. And I just thought, if I have to, like, I don't know the names of any of the flowers. I don't care. I mean, I honed a craft for this thing, and I was able to do it. But what's interesting is when you go to sell a course or a program, you teach a webinar, and a webinar, you can't see the students who are in the class. All you can see is your own reflection. And that reminded me of when I was a young child, how I would sit in front of the mirror. And so that really felt like, oh, wow, I've been in a way preparing for this my whole life without knowing it. And so I believe that I was meant to struggle in the wedding business in order to figure out how to do it, in order to share vulnerably about business. I now have four programs, The Business Behind the Blooms, The Power of Pinning, Know Your Numbers, and a winning website. All four of those programs are amazing. They're great sellers because I'm just very vulnerable and honest about business. I don't tell people what to do. I share with them my failures, and then how I changed it, and how this is what I did, and this is how it helped, and all of that. And so people really feel like they see themselves in my story versus being told that they're doing things wrong, if that makes sense. I think it's just all from the approach. And in June of 2018, I did my last wedding. And I believe that my online courses, where I share very vulnerably about business, prepared me to write Sleeping with a Stranger, which is where I share very vulnerably about my personal life. So when I look back at my whole journey, I believe that every single thing, I mean, from my sister's death to college, to marrying Brian, to him being sick, to my business, to my online programs, I think all of it led to what I believe is my greatest work, which is Sleeping with a Stranger.
Got it. Yeah. And I will say, your website's one of the best websites I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Like, that's definitely on target. So yeah, look, this was incredible. I guess I'll leave the floor to you. If there's anything else you want to share, please do. And, you know, let people know your socials, your website, and any other place they can connect with you.
Yeah, you can. This has been great. Thank you so much for having me. You can find me at jessicazimmerman.com, and basically everything is on there. I have a blog, I have a podcast. You can buy Sleeping with a Stranger anywhere books are sold. There's also links on my website. You can get it obviously at Amazon, Barnes and Noble. There's also the audiobook. So if you want to hear more of this sweet Southern twang, I say that sarcastically, but I do read the audiobook and it's on Audible. And, I hope that you go and get it, but you can find all my social links and stuff on jessicazimmerman.com as well.
Perfect. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you.
The Authors Unite show is sponsored by AuthorsUnite.com, your one-stop shop for becoming a profitable author and maximizing your impact.